This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We have got a memo from New Zealand Bridge about the online strategy that we're going to go through and give our thoughts on it.
It's not just us.
Quick seatbelts on, people. I know. It's not just us. It's just you and me tonight.
It's not a special memo to the Bridge Zone.
We're just going to go through it. So all the clubs would have had a look at it and they would be wanting to get their feedback. Feedback's due by the end of the month, both from the clubs and regional committees. Talking about the 2024 tournaments and events schedule. This is what's proposed, Barry. The 7 national events to be a mix of face-to-face and online. Straight off, what's your thoughts about that? So there's 2 items on the memo. It's the tournament and also feedback about the IPs and what clubs were thinking about that particular program. But let's get into the tournaments and events, Barry. The 7 national events to be a mix of face-to-face and online.
I think that's probably fair. Of the 7 events, of course, we all know that if you really want a national event, online is more national than not, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it reaches out to everybody, doesn't it?
A national event will have heaps of people playing in it if it's online. If we have a face-to-face somewhere, you'll be lucky if you get 20 teams. Mm. Online, you'll probably have 40 plus. That's the reality of it.
Well, the first one is the South Island Teams on the 10th of February next year in Christchurch are hosting that, and they've already made the decision to host that online.
Put me in.
The next one up is the North Island Teams in Wellington, and they've opted for face-to-face.
Yeah, well, I won't be there, Mariana, will you?
Probably not.
It's a tough one. Unfortunately, it's just all about money, Mariana. It probably is for me as much as anybody, is that, you know, if I've got to fly to Wellington and stay somewhere and spend a weekend down there and get somebody to look after everything at my place at home, just all a bit hard.
It is. The next one that comes up is South Island Pairs in Nelson on the 22nd of June. That hasn't been decided yet, and that follows up by Hamilton, who are hosting the North Island Pairs on the 6th of July. Now, I can tell you folks that Hamilton will be asking for that to be hosting online. We also have an event on the 13th of July that is face-to-face. Having 2 big tournaments in a row is probably not ideal for Hamilton, but we can certainly host the North Island Pairs online and then do the face-to-face with our own tournament. I'm encouraged to see that.
Well, there's an interesting thing on this memo they've sent us, which says that, once again, they're going to have 1 weekend a month where events can be held online if the club just wants to. But it also says that if you are holding an event which isn't on one of the weekends that are online, I think the way it reads, and I've both read this at least twice, we think that if you've got an event, you can apply to change to a weekend where the event is held online.
Yeah, but on the other side, it does say that if you've actually got an event that is scheduled as face-to-face on the nominated weekend, you can opt out and reapply for another date. So it won't clash with any online events and you can host it face-to-face. It's working both ways. So that seems fair. If you haven't got one online and you want to host one online, then you can apply. But if you have got one on the online weekend and you're actually doing face-to-face, you can opt out and reschedule for face-to-face at another time. So that seems fair. I think that's all right.
That sounds like a good idea. But to be honest, it's a huge task to try and sort this out so that you can keep as many clubs happy as you can. It's not easy, and I think it's quite a fair way they've done it. I'm just wondering, obviously, it might be quite difficult to switch to one of the online weekends if there's a similar sort of event already looking at being run online. So it might not be easy to switch from a non-online weekend to an online weekend, whereas it'll probably be relatively a lot simpler to switch from an online weekend to a non-online weekend,
yeah,
if that all makes sense.
It would work. So if there was an open tournament on the nominated online, and then you're saying, okay, we've got an intermediate next week, why don't we pop that to online and capture that market, which could quite work. So it doesn't really interfere with the open. It could be that you could do a pairs when they've got a teams event on online. So it doesn't stipulate what type of event it is. You just need to have a look at your 2024 tournament schedule again and have a look to see really if it is going to clash with something.
When you talk about an open event, Mariana, I mean, there's lots of different sorts of open events. And of course, if you're talking about a 10A pairs event or a 10A teams event, the same players probably want to play in both. So even though one's pairs and one's teams, you wouldn't want them being held on the same day, would you?
No, but I was meaning really, you know, like a different grade. So that was an open teams and intermediate online could probably sit quite well.
Yeah, that's a relatively simple one. Actually, by the way, it does seem to me that perhaps intermediate junior tournaments seem to be sort of more successful face-to-face than the higher grade tournaments are. I don't know the reason for it, but it does seem to be, you know, a lot of the open players are happy to play online and would prefer to play online, in fact, whereas the intermediate players perhaps and the junior players perhaps they prefer to play face-to-face.
It might be a more of a comfort thing, I guess, because you can walk around and natter to people and maybe even compare notes, whereas it's quite isolated when you're online. And that's where you get that social interaction. That tab sort of sticks out and it might be more favourable for the intermediates and the juniors.
And in saying that, I'm not too sure that we've had too many intermediate and junior tournaments online to test that out. Even during the trial period, there was a lot of open tournaments held online, but I haven't got the numbers, but I don't know whether there are as many intermediate. Maybe if we had more intermediate and junior tournaments online, they would have huge numbers. I don't know about that.
Hey, Barry, what's your thought about, you know, like Hamilton, they run a open and an intermediate. What about if we had the open face-to-face and the intermediate online? I wonder if that would capture a lot more entries.
I'm pretty sure of one thing, you'd get less entries in the open for sure if it was being rolled face to face. The intermediate one, not so sure. There's no reason that both events couldn't be online or both events couldn't be face to face, really, because they're not competing with each other to a huge degree.
I was just meaning about numbers. If you got more numbers, let's take, for example, the Labour Week in Congress that Hamilton held recently. The numbers were okay for the restricted open, and the open numbers were, we had, what, 23 pairs?
Yep, that was held face-to-face, of course, and that's pretty, I don't know, that's pretty standard when you hold a 10A or...
I know, but what do you think if we held that intermediate or open restricted online alongside a face-to-face? I wonder how many numbers we would have got then for the restricted open.
That would be interesting to see what you
Wouldn't
got.
It? But
the events are totally different. All I know for sure is that the open one would have had more in it if it was online, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
For the other one, that's what we're really talking about, isn't it? Well, they're restricted. My feeling is you would probably get more online than you would get face-to-face. It's just simply logistics, isn't it? But you get people that can play in it from further afield. You can even get Australians playing in it.
True. So this proposal says that it's less than 10% of the tournament schedule. That's the online bridge events. So 1 week in a month, nominated as the online, and it's only to apply for next year. And then there's going to be a full review for 2025. The regional events, though, scheduled on the nominated online weekends, can be played online or face-to-face. Again, if they've got something face-to-face, they can do a special application and switch the event to online. I guess that's the same.
Regional events scheduled on nominated online weekends may be played online or face-to-face. Regional events falling on other weekends should be played face-to-face unless a special application is made to switch the event online. E.g., the host club do not have any events scheduled on the nominated online weekends and wish to apply to run the event online. So in other words, if you've already got an event online somewhere, you will not be allowed to shift your regional event to that. So if Hamilton runs the North Island Pairs online, for instance, they will not be allowed to switch their 10A Swiss pairs to an online weekend because they already have one, which is a little bit disappointing, but that's the way it goes. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? They're saying that less than 10% of the tournaments will be held online, but I'll bet you'll find that it'll be way more than 10% of the participation of tournament players will be online.
Yeah, and I don't think you'll ever get people walking away from the clubs to purely play online. I do know of a couple that only play online. They've got their own reasons for that. It's not just because they can. They've got personal reasons why they wish to. But anyway, that seems interesting. So clubs, you need to get in and have a discussion about that because they are expecting some feedback.
I just want to quickly talk about the people that you say you don't think people will walk away from face-to-face bridge. I'm afraid I think they will and have. Some of them for health reasons, some of them for financial reasons, whatever reasons. Some people are just saying, well, I'll just play the online ones. You know, other players sort of don't like them doing that, but that does seem to be people's choice. Maybe it's a financial choice, or maybe it's a health choice, or maybe it's just the fact that they like one better than the other.
It could be. In terms of financially, we don't have a large subscription at Hamilton. It's $107 for the year. And our table money is $5 still, which I think is really, really good. We don't pay anywhere near as much as you would to go and play golf.
Yeah. So I think that's a different matter, you see. I'm just talking about tournaments. I think people that maybe decide they won't go and play face-to-face tournaments if they have to travel to Timbuktu to get there will probably still continue playing face-to-face at their club. Although there are some clubs that are just getting more and more online, I think they're a sort of a rarity, even if it is Auckland Bridge Club that seem to have online all the time.
Yeah, well, they've been able to find the right marriage, haven't they? They've stuck with online right from the beginning. And remember, they led the way through COVID. Mm. It's a natural migration to go to Auckland, I feel.
Yeah, in saying that, I'm not too sure that the Auckland Bridge Club, they're not making a fortune out of online bridge, Mariana. You know, it's sort of a case of having to get people to play, but it doesn't seem to me like it's going that brilliantly well. That's just the way they're operating, and that's what they've chosen to do. But I don't know, it's because they've got way, way more people playing. They're not probably well down on pre-COVID.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Good morning, Judge Julie. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Not too bad. It's a good day today. Only got me this week because the other chap, he's at a Diwali function.
Oh, well, I hope he's enjoying the light.
Is it that you can also throw colours at people? They wear white?
Yes, one of those. I'm pretty certain that's the one. There's lots of colours. It's really bright and vibrant.
How cool. We have a question. So the question is, when you're playing to a trick, who decides how fast or when that trick is over? So if we turn our cards over really quickly and everyone's turned them over and then they say, oh, hang on, can I have another look? What is the criteria for that?
That's actually a common thing, and it's a really good thing about the way that you play the cards that you want to get into a rhythm about what you do. First of all, once you've turned your card over, you can't look at other people's cards. You can look at your last trick or your hand to see if you're on lead or something like that, but you're not allowed to go further back, and you are certainly not allowed to look at anyone else's turned over cards once you've turned your card over.
Does it matter if you're the last or the first of the ones that's turned over?
Doesn't matter. It's relevant. It's whether you have turned that card over or not. It is really good practice that when you play to a trick, that before you turn your card over, you are happy that you have seen what you want to see of the other cards that were played to the trick. And if someone's turning their cards over quickly, that doesn't mean you can't look. If you've got your card face up, you can ask to see the cards to the trick again, and everyone has to turn them over so you can see.
Do you have to be declarer to request that?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay. So anyone can?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not dummy. Dummy is not allowed to do anything.
Right.
Absolutely, right. Dummy's not allowed to get involved in this. None of their business. They're not playing. Declarer's playing.
So when everyone's turned their cards over and then you think, oh, hang on, can I have another look? The answer should be no.
No, you can't. No. Not at all. So don't play and turn your card over quickly. If you are playing against some people who seem to turn their cards over before it even leaves their hand, they're that fast. It doesn't help them. If you need to see it, you can ask as long as you've still got your card face up.
Wow. I think that happens quite a lot.
It does. What happens is, and it's important to be aware that we get into rhythms. And if we're playing people that are fast, We play fast when we're not comfortable, and we actually end up disadvantaging ourselves because we're playing to a different speed and we're not getting to see what we want to see. Now, that doesn't mean that you take forever or that you can be as slow as you like. I am not suggesting that in any form. But if you're playing someone who seems not to show you their card, that fine, that person does that. But if you've got your card face up, but you can ask to see it. You are entitled to do that.
Okay, so all cards are turned over, and then someone says, oh, can I have a look at it? The answer is no. And then what happens? You call the director.
Yeah, well, yes. You're not allowed to see the card. Once you've turned your card over, you can't ask to see the card. So you're not allowed, okay?
We casually just flip it back over.
Well, often people do without thinking, but you don't have to. No player should turn his card face down until all four players have played to a trick. That's one thing to keep in mind.
Okay, right? Yeah. If you do that, it might get a bit frosty at the table.
Well, I mean, it is what it is, okay?
Yeah.
So long as his side has not led or played to the next trick, the clearer or either defender may, until he has turned his own card face down on the table, require that all cards just played to the trick be face.
Ah, okay.
All right? Until his side has led or played to the next trick, the clearer or either a defender may inspect but not expose their last card play. So that means that if you've played your card and you turned it upside down, but no one has played to the next trick, you can lift it to make sure whether you're on lead or not.
Right.
Or maybe, right. Or if you think you haven't followed suit, that you've revoked to correct it. Thereafter, the cards of quitted tricks may not be inspected except at director's specific instruction. So this also means, and it's really important here from a directing point of view, is that when you think someone's revoked, you do not tell everyone to start looking at their cards and going back tricks and tricks and tricks.
Yep.
You don't do that unless the director is at the table, and the director won't let you do that anyway. They will do it in an orderly method so that we don't get cards rearranged and put out of order. And it is not just frustrating when you get to the table and someone says, I revoked, and they have two cards in front of them. They have the card that they had left in their hand, and they have the card that was the one they played to the revoke trick, and they have no idea where that happened. They've managed to get the cards out, and everything's in a muddle. And you have to try and sort out when and where it happened, and it gets harder and harder, and it takes longer. So you have the cards in front of you. You put them in the order of tricks, not tricks. And when people say making five and you disagree, when people say I might have revoked, whatever happens, you do not touch those cards.
Yeah.
And you call the director and the director will sort it out. If you don't have an agreement about the tricks, you can often see that your tricks are different to someone else's, you call the director so they can sort it out. But more importantly, from your point of view of the question, if your cards face up, say the clearer leads to the next trick, you say, I'm sorry, but I'm still looking at the last trick. But they don't get to bully you in to playing at a speed that is uncomfortable. They don't get to turn cards over quickly so that you don't get to see them. So if you need to take some time to check that you have seen what you need to see, you are entitled to do that. You are not entitled to be as slow as a wet week and hold up play indefinitely. Okay? You don't get to sit there and try and memorise things and take forever to do it. I'm sorry, but that's not allowed.
Okay? Well, we might get a toe-tappy Judge Julie by
your
side.
You are allowed to have your card there thinking, yes, I'm happy, I'll turn it over. And that can be a rhythm of its own, right? But you're not allowed to be behind time.
Okay. And just on a side note, you were saying when director comes to the table, when the director's been called to the table, who should really be talking to the director?
The person who called the director to the table. And it's really hard. And you sit there and you go, I can't hear you, and I certainly can't hear you. So who called me, right? You tell me. You'll all get a turn to tell me, but you don't interrupt and talk over people. And I have sent people away from the table so I can hear one side and then the other when things are getting heated. Right.
Yeah, I have witnessed that somebody calls the director to the table, and the minute they arrive, all four of them start talking.
We had a director in Christchurch who would start counting slowly, quite quietly, and when someone finally figured out that's what he was doing, and they would say, "What?" And they said, "That's how much I'm going to penalise you if you're not quiet." Right. And one of the other things that helps you when you are a director is if you get to the table and you talk quietly, people quieten down to listen to you.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work, but it is actually quite effective. And it's quite a surprise when normally we try to talk loudly to get people to listen.
Absolutely.
If you talk quietly, it actually is more effective in some cases.
Yeah, I used to use that with our children. And the other one was, do you really want me to get up and come and sort it out?
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's sort of like the one where you get one child to cut the cake and the other one to choose. There are ways around. There are ways around things. Unfortunately, with adults, you know.
Yeah, I know. The most common argument we used to get with the kids was who sat in the front when we took them to school.
Oh, so
we used to take two cars, because one went one way and one went the other way. And we used to have odds and evens. So whatever the date was, if you were on the even, you sat in the front. If you were on the odd, then you sat in the front.
Whereas
you're
not sitting in the front at all now, so it doesn't matter.
True. That's awesome, because that is something that has come up before. And
if all cards turned over, you don't get to look at the cards because you did it too quickly.
Right.
Okay, if you say, oops, sorry, I didn't see that, what was it? No one has to tell you. And dummy has no rights here because dummy is not playing. So dummy 100% of the time cannot be involved in any discussion about the tricks.
Brilliant. Well, that tidies up a couple of things. Thank you for that. Have a good rest of the week.
Yep, you too.
So about the IPs, they've got some feedback that the proposal wasn't well received, that IPs would form part of the 2024 Congress. So they've got a couple of suggestions, and they're keen to hear from clubs and regions as to their preference. But one of the ones that I do see in the suggestions, Barry, is replace it with a new event. What do you think that could be?
They also say they'd welcome suggestions. Maybe they've got something in mind, but maybe they don't know either what you'd replace it with.
They've got seven suggestions, and the seventh one is cancel the event entirely.
Well, I guess that has to be one of the suggestions. I can't really see that happening, but you never know. You know, it is supported. People still find it a bit of an honour to represent their region.
Yeah. So they've got face-to-face in the days immediately before Congress. Finals only, so the top two teams in each grade played face-to-face before or during Congress. Qualifying rounds to be played online. Number three is online on a weekend to be decided. Face-to-face, but outside of Congress. Face-to-face and link to another event, replace it with a new one, or cancel the event entirely. Well, I'm for number three, online, keep it online.
Well, it's certainly being held online this year. Obviously, that's coming up in just a couple of weeks' time. Once again, and I don't want to sound like the Minister of Finance, it must save absolute truckloads of money, Mariana, for the NZ Bridge and for the players and for the regions who fund a lot of this.
That's right. One thing that I do think is that the trial and the actual event are just too far apart, Barry.
That's a different issue, I guess. I guess maybe it's not so easy to fit a trial into the bridge tournament calendar so that it doesn't clash with anything else.
I guess you're leaning to online as well.
Well, perhaps I am. I'm just looking at this option two, where it says all the qualifying rounds will be online. So as well as having the actual trials online, which some regions are doing, I think that part will still be up to the regions, whether their trials are held online or whether they're held face-to-face. So then they're saying that the qualifying rounds would also be played online, and only the two teams would go to Congress and play a final there. That's sort of an interesting suggestion. It's something that hasn't been done before. It does add a little bit to Congress, having that final played at the beginning of Congress. Everybody's arriving and the finals are being played. They can, you know, have a look at that. It gives them something to look at and maybe creates a bit of a buzz around the Congress. I don't know. That may be worth a thought.
I don't think you should cancel it. I'll have to put my thinking cap on if you're going to replace it with a new event, but I don't think my thinking cap works within 16 days.
Of the 7 options. I don't think I'd go with cancelling the event. So that's number 7 out. Number 6, replace it with a new event. I'd probably eliminate that one.
Yeah, we don't have enough time.
Number 5, face-to-face link to another event. Oh, okay. So that would mean that you'd run it alongside the South Island teams or something before that. You know, that would be difficult. Face-to-face, but outside of Congress. That's a possibility, I guess, but you've still got all that expense, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. And face-to-face in the days immediately before Congress, there's still some expense in that, extra accommodation.
That's what always used to be done, and they got away from that. The trouble with that is, if you are in an interprovincial team and you've got a week's bridge playing at Congress, and then you're also going to have a few days playing in the interprovincials, as they say in the blurb at the beginning, some of the players are getting older. That's a big ask to play 10 days bridge in a row. You'd be a zombie by the end of that, Mariana.
We've gotten better at how we manage our teams when they play online. When you're captaining, why waste all that experience? Because they've done it, you know, and we're getting better and better at managing teams online. So I think it's too short to change it back.
I guess one of the benefits that we've got is, of course, it's so easy to have, well, not that easy, but you can have a non-playing captain for each team and there's no expense in getting them to the event. You have a non-playing captain looking after each team. You have 6-person teams because, hey, you don't have to send them all. You don't have to buy an airplane ticket each. You can have 6-person teams and a non-playing captain. No worries at all. You could probably have a coach and a team psychologist as well if you had one available, Mariana.
And a physio.
yeah, that's right.
Have a strapper.
I mean, there are some benefits to having it online, of course.
I think New Zealand Bridge has done the right thing and placed it online, and I think it should remain online because financial aspect is just a no-brainer.
There is one thing that face-to-face, of course, has that online doesn't. Is that face-to-face, all the teams can get together. You know, the open team, the intermediate team, the women's and the seniors from each division, they can all get together and talk and they can encourage one another. And of course, it's obviously, that doesn't happen online. So that's something that you miss, the camaraderie of each region. I really don't want to see the interprovincials go, though, because it is something that players can play in. It's as close to playing in an international event as you can be without actually playing in one, playing for your province. It's
all right, well, we'll have to leave it now. We're going to have to get Ellen on the show next week to have a conversation about it now that we've sort of worked out our dance and see how they're going to knit together this tapestry of, because it's a big issue, isn't it?
Mariana's talking about Alan Morris, chairman of New Zealand Bridge, who was on last week. We're hoping to get him on again to talk a little bit about now this document is out. By the way, we haven't talked about the NZ-wide pairs, the Lovelock pairs. Won by Grant Jarvis and Lynn Gerson of the Franklin Club.
Catch you next week and see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.